Hello and welcome. I'm Simon Mundy. In our Chamber Orchestra of Europe podcasts, I talk not only to its players and staff, but to some of the great musicians who work with it as soloists and conductors. In this episode, it was a great pleasure to sit with Sir Andras Schiff in a practice room at the Kronberg Academy's brand new concert hall, the Casals Forum, near Frankfurt, with which he's been linked for many years and where the COE now has a residency. The piano's opening entry in Haydn's piano concerto known as No. 11. Sir Andras's career and the orchestra's have been connected almost all the way through, running parallel at times but frequently interlocking. He's become one of the COE's most trusted and favourite artistic partners and is regarded as an honorary member. So I asked him to start from the beginning when he first came to work with the orchestra.
We go back a long time. 1985, I think. Litchfield. So that's almost 40 years. Amazing. Doesn't feel like it. So there was a little festival in Litchfield. You must be familiar with it. Beautiful place. Wonderful cathedral. The whole orchestra came and we played all kinds of wonderful things. Sándor Vég was there, George Malcolm was there, Heinz Holliger, Aurel Nicolet, and we all played with the Chamber Orchestra of Europe.
You had a very close relationship with Sándor Vég, didn't you?
Very close, indeed. Well, I'm very lucky that I have had that. Mind you, and there was a connection because in the violin section and indeed in all of the COE, there were many Vég pupils that time. Still, some are still here. And even Richard Lester, principal cello, he always played with Vég, with his Camerata in Salzburg. And Marieke Blankenstein, and many of them studied with him. So that was very special.
What did you and Vég, how did your connection go, and what was your raison d'etre?
Well, we come from the same country, but very different generation. Mind you, I was born in Budapest and he's from Transylvania, which is a much better part of Hungary. People speak much more beautiful Hungarian there, and they keep a close connection to folk music. And this is the part of Hungary also where Bartók comes from. Vég left Hungary in just after the war, still in the late 40s. And so I never met him in Hungary. It was just a name from the radio when they played some of the recordings of his quartet. But as a child, I came to Dartington. And I was maybe 15 or something. And had master classes with George Malcolm, who was teaching there. And Vig was doing the violin master class, and he played some concerts, and I remember this was a revelation, the way he played, the way he made music, the way he taught. So, and then he was very kind. He knew I was a child from Hungary, so he was interested. I played for him. He liked it very much. He encouraged it. I was used to teachers in Hungary who never said one single good word, whatever I played. So he was shouting away and saying, "Oh, this is wonderful what you are doing, carry on." So, and then much later, when he founded the International Musician Seminar in Prashakov in Cornwall, then he invited me, remembering me from those days from Dartington. So this was like in the late 1970s, and then came and we played chamber music. We got really very much together in spite of the age gap. Then we played all the Beethoven sonatas together and recorded them. And as a conductor, I started to play with him one Mozart concerto after the other with his Salzburg Orchestra, and then we recorded all the Mozart concertos. So this was a very important part of my life.
Do you think he influenced the way you actually played the piano, the way that you approached the music itself?
Yes, very much so. Maybe more than any pianist. Although I have to say I had wonderful teachers, Gyöngy Kurtág and Ferenc Rados, first and foremost. But Vig liberated me. He was natural. He said, "Oh, just play naturally and breathe and don't be worried." So coming from Hungary, from those very severe teachers, where I lacked self-confidence, really. If people always tell you how badly you play, it's not exactly constructive. So Vig was also very critical. It was not so easy to please him. But so Vig had a similar effect on me like Casals had on Vig, if I may say that.
Thank you.
The COE's principal bassoon, Matthew Wilkie, playing the slow movement of Mozart's concerto K191, with Sandor Veig conducting in 1991, available on COE Records. Sir Andres and I continued our conversation by talking about conducting style, especially when directing a concerto as soloist. His attitude, I suggested, was the opposite of a dictatorial maestro. He rarely uses a baton and guides the players with the slightest of gestures.
Of course, I also really come from chamber music. So from my early childhood, it was essential. And this orchestra is very special. It's not like other orchestras. You cannot do this with any orchestra. It's a chamber music approach where people are listening, giving and taking. They know exactly at a given moment what their function is. They can step forward or sideways and let the others do. And also in the, it's very democratic. However, there is a point where democracy doesn't work in the music. It works up to a certain extent, but in the end, there has to be one voice who, you know, you cannot put up questions like a choice of tempo to a referendum. It will be a mess. So somebody has to make these decisions, and much of music making is, you have several choices and you have to make one decision and take responsibility for that. But other than that, it does work that democratically with a collective intelligence. This orchestra is very intelligent.
I noticed that you just set the tempo by playing a little bit of the how you want it to go at the beginning and then letting them get on with it.
Yes, but you know, usually, even with a great orchestra, I would stand up and conduct this tutti because it's big. It's not like the Haydn we did the other day that really doesn't need a conductor. But by the time you get to Beethoven, is needed, and yet with the COE I can just say, please take this tempo and this character, and I can trust them, and they appreciate this trust. So I've been observing maestri all my life, learned a lot from them, what to do and also what not to do. And leading an orchestra is a fascinating thing. I never consider myself a conductor, but somebody who conducts out of love of music and a passionate interest in music and curiosity. How does it work? Also, how does the psychology of an orchestra work?
Here is Sir Andras conducting the COE, led by Stephanie Gonley, in the scherzo of Haydn's Symphony No. 104, The London. They were performing at the 2022 Herbst Gold Festival in Haydn's own concert hall at Schloss Esterházy, the castle only a few kilometres from the modern Austro-Hungarian border. just wanted to talk a little bit about the repertoire that you play with them, and indeed the repertoire you most enjoy doing. Is there a sort of time limit either side, or is there just a period, or are there certain composers you really like playing with that orchestra, but also in your own practice?
Well, I have my preferences, and also I know my limits. And of course, also this orchestra also has the limits. They will not play Ein Heldenleben of Richard Strauss, or they will not play the Mahler Second Symphony. They may play the Fourth Symphony, but I know that I should not get into that repertoire, because it's not even what I love most, and there are other people who can do it much better. But I think that with Bach, with Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven, Schubert, Bartók, the composers that I know intimately well from the piano and from the chamber music, I think there are certain advantages what you bring into that. Really, a maestro can do a Mahler or a Shostakovich symphony much better. I wouldn't even attempt it. But if that maestro has never played a Schubert piano sonata, or never played a Schubert song or a Mozart piano concerto, then it's a question of style and language, musical language.
Do you play Ravel and Debussy much?
I love Debussy, Ravel much less. I admire him, but Debussy is so very close to me. I'm beginning to play his music more, and it's a work in progress. But I will not get to Ravel, because again, I'm also self-critical. There are people who can do that much better. But I think I have an affinity with Debussy, with the colors and the clarity. It's not wishy-washy music, it's very clear, it's wonderful.
Drashev playing the cadenza from Haydn's Piano Concerto No. 11 at the same concert in Eisenstadt. The video of it can be found on Medici TV's subscription service. As we talked more about the repertoire that still lures him, Sir Andras considered his relationship with the Beethoven sonatas.
Having played maybe 30 times the complete Beethoven sonatas in concert cycles, and now I don't want to play a 31st time, but I have a dozen or so Beethoven sonatas which I love even more than the rest. And I want to concentrate on those and go deeper and deeper and deeper, because this is so great music. So I keep playing all the Bach, a lot of Haydn, a lot of Mozart, Beethoven, yes, but not everything. Schubert, everything, and I'm reducing that. And then third, there are also physical limitations. You get older and the mind is good, but the body is revolting. So Bartok's second piano concerto I played a lot and pretty well also. I cannot manage it physically anymore, so I don't want to make a fool of myself and let the youngsters play it. But I still play number 1 and 3.
Going back to the Chamber Orchestra of Europe and your work with them, we talked about Litchfield at the beginning and we know what you're doing now. But in the middle, what are the projects that you remember and with affection?
Oh, there were wonderful things. We did many, many tours. I mean, first, I played as a soloist only, but Chando Veig was conducting, Claudio Abbado was conducting. And then they trusted me, and the first time we did just from the keyboard was when we recorded for Decca the Bach concertos. And that is still there, that recording, and I'm very fond of it.
Third movement, marked Allegro assai, of Bach's F major clavier concerto, BWV 1057, which shares material with his fourth Brandenburg concerto. That was recorded by Andras Schiff for Decca in Vienna's Concerthaus way back in January 1989.
They gave me the confidence to go further, and then we did Haydn and Mozart and Beethoven from the keyboard, and we went even further. We played both Brahms concertos, we played the Schumann concerto without the conductor. We played the Dvorak piano concerto. We even did the Bartok third without the conductor, which is really very hard, but they did it brilliantly. And then they were kind enough to let me do symphonic repertoire. It keeps going, so we have every year at least one, if not two, projects together. Now Eisenstadt came to it, and Kronberg. These are very, very nice additions, and we do tours. But we have done American tours. It was wonderful.
I wanted to talk a little bit too about the sound you look for in the piano, and what sort of sound you look for.
Many kinds of sounds, depending on the composer, depending on the composition. The piano is not my favorite instrument. The cello is my favorite instrument. I play the piano because of the repertoire. So, in that, never a percussive instrument, but a singing and a speaking. And the advantage of the piano is that it's a polyphonic instrument. So you have voices, you have chords, but you have to voice those chords, because if you just play an 8-part chord where all 8 voices are equally strong, it makes a terrible noise. So you have to balance those 8 voices, that not 2 voices are equal. The art of the piano playing and how the great composers write for the piano is to make illusions. For example, make the illusion that you are sustaining a note, and that you do with the help of the other voices. Clarity is very important for me, transparency. lot of pianists use the pedal indiscriminately, so they just step on it and then everything is covered by a wonderful thick sauce. It's similar like the string players who vibrate all the time, and the great art of string playing is also the variety of dozens or hundreds sorts of vibrato or non-vibrato, and how you mix that. And this orchestra does that beautifully, and you can talk about that, and so there is always a clarity in the sound that they produce.
I noticed in the Haydn that you were playing the other day that you always look for the legato around the beat. You're not always going for the beat itself. You're looking for a legato around it, where the beat comes in the middle.
Luckily, this orchestra doesn't need beating. But sometimes we have to talk about it. It's a question of rhythm. Rhythm is very important. Pulse is very important. Pulse like a heartbeat. And the way you are dealing with time. Physical time, but musical time. So a beat or a pulse could be physically right and musically wrong, because it comes exactly at the time, but you would need a breath of fresh air, breathing. Wind players, brass players, they breathe naturally, they have to, but string players and pianists, they tend to forget the necessity to breathe.
I hope you've enjoyed the conversation with Sir András Schiff. Here, to finish, he's conducting the finale of Bartók's Divertimento for Strings, a work the COE have played throughout their history, including with Sándor Vaig, Sir András's mentor and friend of Bartók himself. So the interpretation has been handed down in a direct line. I'm Simon Mundy. Do join me again for more explorations of the COE's work.